So one of the meaningful responses we can make to the way things are is really practicing to keep our hearts open and to let that openness be something that flows into the world. We're also called in this to reflect again, as we did in the second contemplation of the morning, on what it is that we really know and understand about who it is, or what it is, we say maybe, that lives and dies. And what it is, or if it is, that there is that which is not born and does not die. And this question and this reflection is also a part of the jigsaw, or the framework of this territory. I'd like to read you another poem. By Lauren Isley. It's entitled The Snowstorm. It is the first and last snows, especially the last, that blind us most, Thoreau once said. And I wonder what he possibly could have been thinking, since snow is always with us and keeps falling in its proper season, the generations accepting it without first or last. Perhaps this. There is a single snow which a child stores in his memory, the first snow, when he falls in a drift, the first snow that reveals secrets, like the flake on his sleeve, always to be remembered, because it brought knowledge of crystalline perfection, infinite diversity to be tasted with his own salt tears. The immeasurable prodigality of the universal worlds in which we are lost. The first and blinding snow of childhood. Second, the view from the farm window. The last, with the black guest waiting at the door, and outside, falling and falling across corn shocks, wheat stubble, ploughland, the whiteness of the void. Lucretius must have so seen his atoms, created out of them a world. A wind whipped the flakes aside, perhaps, a snow flurry that conceived a farmhouse kitchen and a stove, made fields, made animals, made men and women. Look, can you say I am not composed of snowflakes? My eyes are filled with them. They are falling faster now. Suppose I go outside and join them. Can you say that I was ever here? No. The first blindness is to see the ultimate minute perfection that is the illusion of the water drop. The second is to believe the black guest at the door. My friend, there is only the blindness of a million years of snowfall. And you and I, wraiths, discoursing as we fall. Do not bother to throw up the window. Snow is already blowing. The room is disassembled. Our substance, the room's substance, is snowflakes. We are falling apart now. We have re-entered the eternal storm. in the Dharma teachings, we are invited to contemplate the arising of the appearance of individuality in the way in which we conceive ourselves to be separate. And it's the understanding of this, conceiving, that is the key to understanding what in the Dharma teachings is called freedom, and is pointed to as and described as the deathless. So understanding the illusion, or the way the appearance of individuality is constructed, is the key in terms of Dharma teachings to understanding also the freedom that the teachings are pointing us towards, and the very nature of what it is that is referred to in the Dharma teachings as the deathless, that the Buddha spoke of, and that the teachers, the wise women and wise men, have spoken of through the generations, from the time of the Buddha through to this time now, that we too have the opportunity to understand this. So don't try and organize your mind to understand this. It's not the organ that's required. The fact that it doesn't quite work or make sense is a good sign. So just, in a way, let those words come through, and the images I find quite lovely. The first blindness is to see the ultimate minute perfection that is the illusion of the water drop. The second is to believe the black guest at the door. My friends, there is only the blindness of a million years of snowfall. The Buddha speaks of this path as the movement from blindness to seeing, avidya, sometimes translated as ignorance, which is a little pejorative. It's blindness, it's not seeing. And part of why we don't see is because we're fixed already on an image of what we have believed as a totality of truth that actually tries to make things which come and go, including what we call ourselves, into something that's fixed and permanent. And so the contemplation of death actually starts to unpick the sense of solidity we give to that permanence and continuity in all things. Not because we want to make ourselves feel bad, but because something in the unpicking of that, the softening of that, the opening of that, starts to allow us to open to something else. My friend, there is only the blindness of a million years of snowfall. And you and I race, discoursing as we fall. Do not bother to throw up the window. Snow is already blowing. The room is disassembled. Our substance, the room's substance, is snowflakes. We are falling apart now. We have re-entered the eternal storm. To understand the universality that is revealed in and through and by the particularity. Not apart from it, not something other than it. There isn't something other than just this. What's here? And it's not somewhere else. And yet there's something about the way we tend to look at what's here that means we don't actually see all of what's here. But we can know the truth that these teachings point to, that is liberating. And it isn't a get out free card when it comes to dealing with the reality of birth and death. It's not that one has to or one avoids that reality, but it reveals a freedom and a suchness to it all. So our last contemplative exercise we're going to do together in here. And if anyone needs to use the loo, you can. If you can hold just another 2 moments while I tell you what this is, then you can go out and come back in. So what we're going to do is do some walking meditation in a way, or simply being meditation, in this space, all of us together. Now, that's going to involve, obviously, being aware of not bumping into each other too much. But initially, what I'd like you to just do is begin by just staying very much in and with yourself and just moving in the space together. Now, for some of you, if the mobility is limited, it might not be so easy to do. It's okay just to stay in one place and look in different directions or move so far as you feel able to. Okay? It's not the movement per se, because even if someone is in one place, everyone else will be moving around them. But to begin with, we'll just stay with ourselves. And so mostly staying in your body, in your space. And then at some point, in case you're not here when I say it, I will say, okay, we'll shift that to looking. I almost don't want to tell you what I'm going to tell you to do in a second. So actually I won't. I'll just say it more than twice. I'll say it more if people come in. Let's start with that. Okay? So now the thing about this is it's not walking meditation like you've done before. You're not going to have a nice 5 meter stretch all to yourself. So what I'd suggest you do is just move in the space mindfully in your body as far as you can, or coming back if you get drawn out, distracted. And notice if you start going somewhere or doing something, and if you can, don't. So random, aimless, or undirected movement walking in the space. You might want to make a few, break the chairs up a little bit so we can get around them. And if you're always going in straight lines, try wiggly ones. If you're always going clockwise, try it. Just if you notice you're getting into a pattern, just do something different. If you notice you're always not getting into a pattern, try one for a change and see what it's like. In case not having a pattern becomes the pattern. So is that clear in terms of I'm not trying to make an orthodoxy here? It's more like notice if we start, because we go unconscious when we've got a pattern running. We start doing something. Oh, this is how you do that. Yeah? So just start off, and so you can find your way to your feet. You can visit the bathroom and come back if you need to. And we'll just do this a little while. And you can walk up on the section at the front, please. There's no off limits.
of course you can stand for a little while in some place, or sort of just turn on the spot if you wish. But being very much aware of just the sense of your own body moving in the space. The floor under your feet, the space above. You may notice it's not so crowded up there.
So now as you're walking, just staying in contact with your body, but becoming more and more aware of the people around you. So just having a sense of, that means to look up at this point, but just be aware of letting your attention go to the sense of the awareness of the people around you. So not trying to keep your attention on your feet on the floor, or just sensing, feeling, noticing, whatever you notice. Not looking for anything particular in terms of the people around you. Not need to look at them and stuff. Just knowing you're there.
slowly starting to lift again, so you're actually looking at, so then the sort of may see by contact this, but looking at the people and continuing to walk and move. And whatever else you notice as well, the people and the beings that we're here with. And it's okay to make eye contact if that's what happens. Don't try and stop it happening, because it might. And just notice what you experience. There's a response, resonance, reaction, or not, it's fine. Thank you. You can just, not in a rush or directly, but slowly find your way back towards where your seat is. As much time as you get in the next little while, you can return to your feet.
So just taking a moment to land with where you are and maybe have a sense of what that was like for you, what you noticed or experienced, being aware if there's any idea of what should or shouldn't be happening or should or shouldn't have happened in your experience or in other people's behaviour. So, again, I'm curious if there's anyone who'd be interested or would like to just say anything that they noticed or experienced in that exercise or practice, we could call it. Sure.
I was really very surprised. I found it extraordinarily affecting. I was very surprised at how moving I found it personally. There was one point where I actually just had to stop and look round, and I was almost overcome with emotion. I don't know anybody else here, I don't know if any of us individually would get on. but at that moment, I really felt a sense of love just for everybody. I was really quite taken aback. I hadn't expected it. As somebody who doesn't like crowds.
Yeah. Okay, wow. Thank you. Yeah. Things aren't always what we expect. It's interesting, yeah. Probably in the context of silent meditation, a lot of people who don't like crowds turn up. Maybe that's not the case for all of us. But it's interesting if we can have a different experience than what we might otherwise have called a crowd. Thank you.
Well, first thing that struck me about halfway through this, the most marvelous metaphor for human existence. A whole bunch of people wandering around, not knowing where they're supposed to go or what they're supposed to be, trying desperately not to step on each other's toes. But the experience I had of walking was at first very unpleasant. While we were looking, while we were not contacting each other, I felt tremendous anxiety coming back on myself. It was all about what am I supposed to do, where am I supposed to go, how am I supposed to be, this is boring, I don't get it, what's the point, I don't like it.
Yeah, right. I'm sure you're not speaking for just yourself in that one. But anyway, yeah.
And when we were invited actually to lift our gaze and make contact, I felt this incredible relief. And I didn't simply to this young man. I was very smart. I didn't expect anything like that. And I was, I wouldn't describe it as a sort of the kind of love, but it was a genuine happiness. I felt so happy at the connection that I was invited to make. Surprising, but on reflection, no.
Right. So interesting that the really clear transition between the, in a way, the instruction was more to be self-focused and some of the suffering of a kind of an unhelpful, sometimes unhealthy sort of self-centeredness that we can get caught in becomes evident there for you, it seems. And then there's another way to be in this condition, in this situation. The situation didn't change. The only thing that changed was how we, in this case, how you were being in it. Yeah. And interesting that even when we're told, and you know, sometimes I wonder, I make suggestions and they may not make any sense, and people still follow them. Like one could have chosen to say, oh, actually I'll do that long before one got invited to. But mostly and often we don't. Even if it's not comfortable where we are. Thank you.
Something very similar. So when we were involved in ourselves, I was okay. I didn't feel anxious or anything, but feeling sort of, I mean, I didn't realize, but you know, I was feeling okay. But then when we started to look at each other, I felt much more at ease, much more connected, and it was nice to see that some people, because you know, we always in this weekend we always focus on ourselves, so. I didn't see many people smiling properly. I didn't smile so much. And so it was nice to see that brightness in the eyes and the smile on the face. And
it's nice and we feel good. Do you have a sense of what it is that's producing that effect? I mean, obviously it's the contact.
Connection.
Yeah, right, the sense of connection.
So once I realized that, I thought, oh yeah, I was quite separated before, and I became aware that
I saw this. So that experience of feeling separate is inevitably associated with an anxiety.
Mm. Even though I wasn't feeling anxious.
No, but there is. But you noticed it as a relief when you shifted.
Yeah,
so it's like it's the hum of the fridge that we don't even hear it, because it's a background thing that we only notice when the fridge shuts down and we go, Now, there's a level of anxiety associated with operating out of a perceived separateness. That actually it's so much a part of the fabric of what we experience, we don't often discern it as a particular thing that is actually not required.
Yeah. I felt quite comfortable moving around. And actually, when you invited us to make connections with other people, my first reaction was actually one of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, other people are kind of scary.
Yeah.
And but actually, it didn't take long to get over that.
Okay.
Because it was actually quite nice to make connections, and I think it's interesting how the different range of moods in people's eyes.
Mm.
You know, because some people seem to have a kind of sadness left over from the earlier discussion.
Mm.
Some people, you know, just very straightforwardly smiling.
Oh. So just in terms of your sense of the perception of what you're seeing was. Some people sadness, some people happiness.
Quite a range of different moods. But I mean, whatever anybody was feeling, I kind of felt that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that person's at right now. So.
Okay, good. And I think very common also the sense of actually making contact scary. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like something in us. Although it's not that comfortable in the self-enclosed thing, sometimes it's also not always that comfortable opening out to contact. And yet if one does it in a situation where there's some basic framework of respect and care, which is, no one's going to come and do this for 2 days unless it's there. It's for sure. Other things you could do with your weekend. Then something actually shifts. Yeah. Thank you.
Pretty well touching on the same ground, because I found it really interesting hearing the other speakers in the beginning, that I found it, my experience was that it was extremely comfortable being in the, in a sense, being in this contained space, and in some ways it's touching on something you pointed out before, which is often that one comes to these things in a group, in oneself. You know, we sit on a cushion, you sit in there, and it's very contained. And actually, in silence, there's no direct communication. There's no social
connection. No social verbal communication.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of communication going on.
Yeah, but there's a connection of group, in a sense, but it's not. And I was aware also, because I run workshops where often, you know, people get up, and I've done a lot of these kind of things, and there's often a sense of anxiety, of, oh my God, what are we going to be expected to do now, you know. And I was I connected with that, I watched that. But I was actually resistant to opening up into connecting, because I'm very comfortable in the silence.
Okay. So, you know, again, we all of us will have different experiences. Now, I'm not sure how I languaged it or whether I expressed it as I intended. I don't think it was my intention, and I don't know how it came in the language, to say that one was supposed to now be making connection with, as opposed to looking at and seeing how that happened for you, and maybe connection would be what was happening and maybe not. But it's easy that sometimes the pressure comes, or maybe even my language gave some pressure, which wasn't intentional, that we're supposed to now be connected. And there's something that's supposed to happen. I don't know how to do that. And the last time I tried it, they snarled at me, so I don't know. You know, all of that can come. So again, good to see both how it is for you in that situation, and sometimes we're more comfortable in that, you know, not engaging, not connecting.
I have a similar experience when finishing longer retreat, that actually there's a part of me that I don't want to engage with words and with community. I don't want to. You know, I would rather.
And there may be some way in which the experience of connection isn't dependent upon looking into the eyes of, or speaking or smiling at another person. So to look and see, what is it in the staying more contained? Is it that there's a sort of safety of solitude and untouchedness? Or it may be that for some we actually feel a resonance that has a connectedness that's actually harder for us when we come into the more normal social channels. It's different for different people. Good, thank you.
Yes, and my feeling is the opposite of
thank you. Okay, yes.
I absolutely bloody hated every second of it. And it's one of those exercises that triggers something, some sort of, you know, me as an 8-year-old being like, oh. And I really, you know, it's interesting watching how much terror sometimes those kind of, you know, I could really feel there was part of me going, oh Jesus, get me out of here.
You didn't think of going to the loo?
I did go to the loo.
Me too.
And it's just, it is really interesting. I just wanted to say that because I thought I'm probably not the only person who's standing there going, oh God,
Do you have a sense of, and it's really okay that, and this, oh, not that I'm intending for anyone to have any experience, including that one, but do you have a sense of what it is that makes it so difficult for you?
It was a bunch of things. I mean, it's the chaos and all that stuff about, oh God, what should I do? And, you know, and something about, I felt really resistant. I was like, I don't want to play, and I don't want to play with any of these people. But it's just, you know, it's just some stuff that it tapped into.
Sure.
But it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So in a situation like that, if it should ever be in the future, feel free to do what you need to do.
Well, so, I kind of stood by the wall where I felt safe. Mm. It certainly did not feel safe in the middle of the room.
Okay. Good. Good. Yeah.
But I just kind of wanted to say that because
No, thank you.
When we turned out afterwards, you're not the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. And. You know, it's an interesting experience. We all have our individual experience, and then there's also a collective experience that happens, which individually we might not necessarily be conscious of partaking of, and that's okay. But, I won't maybe say too much. Maybe just, was there one or there's a couple more people? I'm just thinking if someone who hasn't had much chance to speak wants to. Because we're going to need to close reasonably soon now. But there was a couple who wanted to speak and there isn't someone else putting a hand up, so, yes? So there's a lot of potential complexities for us in a situation like that. And okay, so I'll come. I just want to offer a couple of reflections broadly around it, but just maybe you also want to speak. Was it?
Yeah, it just interested that it was exactly the same, and I always thought I've done many exercises like that, and I absolutely hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the toilet, and I thought, how long can I drag it out?
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's really strange. Like, it feels so uncomfortable, and I would think, what's the point of doing that? You know, I just find it stupid, and I think, okay, I just.
So things that make us uncomfortable, often we think, let's just avoid them. And that's a reasonable strategy from a certain point of view. Sometimes it's useful to do things that stretch us, but to also be able to say that's enough when it's enough. In terms of my own experience and sense of how and why I bring an exercise like that in, which actually isn't something I've done a lot of, but it's, I find it very interesting to see how we start to sense ourselves and each other in relationship in a situation where there is an almost intentionally structured lack of structure. And part of the thing, the image of the snowflakes from the poem, it's like there's some way in which we're all swirling together here. And we don't always sense that. We don't always recognise that. But sometimes that's actually what also stands out. And sometimes the perspective is more from where I'm sitting, and sometimes would have been very interesting was to be able to see what a top view of that, what was going on in here, might have looked like. And that was sometimes what I was just a little bit with, was okay, so if I was looking down on this, that wasn't one of the instructions, it's just what happened for me, you know, what would that be? I was like, as someone towards the beginning, yes, we were just all moving around, going nowhere, no idea what the heck was going on, and trying not to step on each other's you know, that sense of, and yet the fact that we share this condition, which for some of us it's hard to not connect, for some of us, or to not make visual, verbal contact, and for others of us it's really hard to be in a situation where this is going on like this, and it's not, we can't get comfortable with it, you know. It's like, huh, human beings, look at them. And there's something in all of this that shines through. You want to say, yeah?
Can I just say that I actually felt like it was a translation into action of this novel. And I felt at one point when we were all moving, that was like a sort of a universal storm of snowflakes, and that we were together, even though that there was no individuality, but we were all together. So I felt like the universal side of this snowfall. And then when I had, when I could sense my difficulty in certain sort of approaches, I could feel the individual separation coming into place. And also, for me, the sort of...
Can you, a little louder? Can people hear at the back?
Yeah.
Okay. So just continuing a little louder. I don't think you need to say again. What she was saying was feeling the movement together, the sense of a bit like the image of the snowstorm and the merging and the universality, and then feeling the individual processes she was experiencing, bringing back the sense of individuality. And
also another thing that is a juxtaposition of two languages, which is the Italian eye contact language with the British one. So I come from a culture where people look for a long time, heavily into the eyes of another person. I've lived a long time in Britain, and so lots of time I feel out of balance in both the cultures, because it's, but I was noticing that I was like treading the water before raising my glance, because I know I can have a very sort of direct glance. Like partly comes from my culture, partly it's just my way of relating. But I was fearing, because I know that's London, after all. and I've noticed the diversity on the time of the eye contact since the very moment I came to this country. I noticed that the allowed time of contact, my contact was incredibly shortened, and that you were invading the space. So, just these two languages.
Thank you. So, I realise that there's, even with having a whole weekend, there's more, but the weekend is going to end. So that's the nature of things. Weekends too are subject to this. And I'm just aware, and it's not accidental entirely, that I didn't ask for feedback with regard to the experience of the contemplation of who am I, or what is it that doesn't die. Talking about that, particularly in this kind of a situation, tends to lead to kind of it becoming cerebral. If there's something in your experience which is important for you or significant to you in that, it might be that you want to share it with someone at some point, but don't rush. And it's not that there's supposed to be something that happened or didn't happen, but just listen to whatever did happen for you in that. And you know, if you find you want to speak with someone about it, you might see who that might be. So sometimes the language isn't the medium. The verbal language isn't the medium. And so I kind of want to move into the closing of the retreat at this point. And I'm very struck by the sincerity and wholeheartedness with which you've all engaged in what's being suggested. Even though sometimes one may have, well, you may have felt it, no one's actually stood up and said, no, that sounds like a load of rubbish, I'm not doing that. It's actually very lovely to feel the wholeheartedness of you all. We've covered a lot of territory, and some of it in degrees of depth that are not necessarily in proportion to the relatively short amount of time of one weekend. So that's a marker of the degree of wholeheartedness and commitment and practice that you've both expressed here, but that you've also brought here from your lives. And I'd like to suggest that, see if you feel that any of these contemplations are useful for you in your life. You might want to bring them in as part of your practice. You don't have to. It might be, this was interesting, or it was even really useful, but that's enough for now. That's really fine. But some of these practices and some of these ways of reflecting are really powerful and supportive and complementary to meditation practice and other such things. And for myself, I think I've mentioned some of them, but for years and years and still coming back to this year, these things that I love, I don't get to keep as a practice. Really liberating for the heart. It means one can actually really have what we have. Strangely, the idea that I get to keep it is the thing that stops us from having it. Yeah? Very, very interesting how that works. As soon as we realize we don't get to keep it, then we can really have it. Whatever it might be. So, if you're so interested, you can, pick it up, take it for a while. There are some good books on the subject of these contemplations. I have already a couple of references to A Year to Live as a program, Stephen Levine's book, and he's written, and together with his wife, a number of books on the theme of the territory around death, including A Year to Live, Healing into Life and Death, and Who Dies. And there's more. There's also a very good book by a teacher in America, Larry Rosenberg. He's an insight meditation teacher based in Cambridge near Boston, and he looks a lot more in detail at some of the material in the Buddha's teaching on this territory as well, which I've touched on briefly, but it's not my primary orientation. It's called Living in the Light of Death. Maranasati, Living in the Light of Death. Maybe just Living in the Light of Death, yeah. Larry Rosenberg. And apparently, someone told me, who I bumped into, a friend when I was coming on the train into London, that at the moment in the Tate Modern, not more than 20 minutes walk from here, there's a room, I don't know this, he told me, I'm believing him, he's a genuine friend, that there's a room in there, an installation called The Tank, in which some women are talking about death. That's all I know about it. I thought, well, we could go for an outing, but we don't quite have time. But if you're interested, to reflect and see the different ways in which the theme comes into your life or your world. Please be really gentle and kindly towards yourself and wherever you find yourself right now and in the coming days or possibly beyond into the coming weeks around this topic. Some of what we've done has been very powerful and may generate ripples that we haven't yet actually encountered. And if that's so, really important not to feel like that's not okay or you did something wrong. Now, I'm not saying this is going to happen. It might not happen at all. But if it does, what's important is to be respectful of your experience. And if you feel you need to check in with someone, to ask a friend or someone to have some contact. If anyone feels like it's really, really difficult, my email address, yanipostelnik, that's my name, it's written down in various places here, @gmail.com. You can always contact me if you wanted to and have a further chat. But obviously if everyone needed to, it might take a time before I got through them all. But I'm aware of, inviting you into something that, may take some time for digestion. And so, as I said, I think at the end of the first day, Mills, at some point I get to look at you all day. You just get to look at me. But it's really a privilege to be able to come and be and practice and reflect and explore with you all. Thank you for being here. As I said,